Welcome to Writer Pants on Fire, where authors talk about things that never happened to people who don't exist. I'm your host, Mindy McGinnis. You can check out my books and social media at mindymcginnis.com and visit the Writer Pants on Fire blog at writerpantsonfire.blogspot.com. Our guest today is Kurt Dinan, author of the YA novel Don't Get Caught, which was recently nominated for Yalta's Teen Top 10. Kurt joined me to talk about how querying is like taking a stick in the eye every day, and how writing short stories helped him be a better novelist. Since this is a podcast for aspiring and established writers, I like to talk to guests about how they got their agent and began their careers. So, tell us a little bit about how that happened for you.
I didn't start writing until I was in my 30s. I suppose. Mm-hmm. And I was writing short stories for a long time, like horror short stories and whatnot.
Those are hard. I personally find short stories harder than a novel.
I understand why people say that, but I think it taught me a lot about writing contained pieces and whatnot. But I was doing that for a long time. And then I wrote basically what's a psychological YA horror novel that I spent about 4 years on. And, I think like 19 agents read it. I went the whole query letter route, which is just the worst thing ever. You know, 19 agents read it. They all had completely differing opinions, but ultimately they all were like, yeah, we can't sell this. So I buried that thing, decided writing horror for me was stupid because that's just not my mindset. I think you have to have like a darkness in you somewhere, which I really don't.
Like me?
You are darkness incarnate in this like pretty package. And then there's just darkness and evil underneath. No one knows unless they know you. And then they're like, oh yeah, it's there. So, you know, I was like, I need to write something that's more me. And, you know, that's how I ended up writing Don't Get Caught, which is completely me. I had to start the whole query letter process again. And, you know, for the people who haven't done it, like, I would rather take a sharp stick in the eye day after day for a year rather than have to write another query letter. But I did that and I sent those out. And I am not a target your agent person. At 45 years old, I'm like, time is fleeting and they're all getting it. So, you know, I was like, I'm open for business. Like, who wants me? You know, I got a lot of responses because, you know, as much as I don't like writing query letters, I'm pretty good at it, I suppose. I just suddenly one day got the old email from Carrie Sparks, who's with LGR, and she wanted to talk on the phone, and a bunch of agents had it. But even after I got off the phone with her, I was like, that's exactly the person I need. Like, I'm going to need someone who laughs at my jokes, who thinks I'm funny, and will like baby me, you know, me through all of this. If other agents have your manuscript, let them know you have an offer so they can read the book. And one guy came back, it was a guy, and he wanted to represent me. And after talking to him on the phone for 5 minutes, this is not what I need. I was like, he's such a businessy dude. That's not what I need. Like, he's not going to have patience or time. I even regret having to go through that part of the process, letting other agents know, because I knew. I was like, nope, it's Carrie. She's fantastic. And the nice thing is her husband is from Dayton. So they come to town, you know, even though they lived in New York, now they're in Portland. She's in town, like she's 30 minutes away. We can get together and just have a couple of beers and eat and bullshit. And that's awesome. Like, that's exactly what I need. And then she's a complete shark on the phone. She says things in conference calls to publishers and stuff that I am shocked by, like stuff I could never say that need to be said. So it was a very traditional path.
And that's what I find in talking to every author that I've interviewed and most of the authors that we are mutual friends with. In fact, if not all, definitely most, they have found their agents through the query process. And so, though it is painful, as you said, stick in the eye, mine is I would rather have a baby out my nose. It works. It's one of those things that you hate to say, but it works. It's like waxing your car by hand.
I understand why that process is in existence. It's scary when you hear the numbers. How many queries they're getting a week, you know, how many people are in the game or trying to get in the game. I mean, it's pretty sobering. Once you make it through, there's a whole other set of things to stress out and worry and hate.
I think the query process, it does a good job of not only finding the good writers, but finding the people that can take it.
Yeah.
Here's a question that just occurred to me. Do you think that because you were writing shorts for so long that that helped you be able to craft good queries?
I'm a studier. So when I don't understand something, you know, that's the beauty of the internet. Other people have this problem too. And so I just read as much as I could. I mean, I spent a week reading every single post on Janet Reed, right? The Query Shark.
Yes.
Reading every single post on there. Okay, I get this in theory. And then another 2 weeks crafting that stupid thing. I'm a good editor. I'm not a good drafter. So I think my, you know, my short stories would go through 10, 12 drafts before I thought, okay, this is ready. And I think being able to cut things down, cut things back, I learned that from writing short stories. And it definitely helped with writing a query letter where every single sentence has to have punch. And I probably did learn that through writing short stories.
Have you tried to publish your shorts anywhere?
I had modicum success writing short stories. I had one show up in one of Ellen Datlow's Best Of, which was a nice...
You did. That's very nice. I mean, I know the name.
The last short story I ever wrote and tried to publish was the best one. You know, and I had another one show up in another Best Of, you know, that was in bookstores. And that was nice. But that whole thing, like, that's another process where you're like...
Oh, yes.
How many people out there are publishing horror short stories? And then you've got to find them, right? And hope you get paid. But I had made a lot of contacts. I had made a lot of friends. A lot of my writing friends, you know, they write horror fiction. I don't have much in common with them anymore, you know, because that's what they do. Here I am writing YA now and not even YA horror. It was fun when they would come out and my book would end up in some anthology. But no, I don't want to go back to that.
I told you last time I saw you, I think we were in Cincy, that I was writing shorts and trying to get them out there. And I have hit nothing but brick walls. So I'm back at the rejection phase of life. And that's fine. It's good. It's humbling. It's important to be reminded that I might be able to write a novel, but maybe my shorts aren't that great. It's a new arena that I'm going to wander into, and I want to start trying to write essays as well. That's something I've always been interested in, and it's a completely different art form, and I thought I'd give that a shot. So I'm just a glutton for punishment.
You already do it. I mean, you write them on your blog. Those are essays.
No, that's true. That's true. That's true.
If you probably approached your essays like you approach your blog entries, they would be highly successful. I still go look at your blog and read your back entries because they're great.
Are you familiar with Scott Russell Sanders by chance?
No.
I went to Otterbein College and we have a common book every year. And my freshman year, the common book was a collection of essays by Scott Russell Sanders called The Paradise of Bombs. It was so good. And I had never been exposed to that type of writing. I'd never been exposed to essays and reading nonfiction in short bursts. I'm going to go back to that and read it again and take notes from him. I personally put that style and that skill up on a pedestal. I'm very impressed by it.
It's all writing, though. Being able to craft a nice sentence, it's just got a different feel behind it. I mean, short story and novel writing, I learned a lot in short stories that helps me with my novels now. I read Slush for a magazine one summer, and I got it. I know I'm not buying this, and we're one paragraph in. Okay, so what have I learned? I've learned your first sentence has to be good enough that I want to read the second sentence. And
that's right.
Now that I'm done with the first page, I have to want to read the next one. You know, I attacked all short stories and even novels now, like, you might not like it at the end, but you're damn well going to finish it. That even counts with, like, with essay writing, right? You're leading up to a point, and this is building off of this, which is building off of this, which is just really chapter building. You know, you're just dealing with something more real, I suppose.
Part of the process that I'm going through with submitting to Lit Mags is that you usually are paying a reading fee, but part of the reading fee is that you get a subscription to the mag then, which is pretty cool. So I've been getting some things. Some of them, like you're saying, I'll start it and I will think I'm not into it. I'll try something else. And most Lit Mags are a combination of art, photography, poetry, fiction, nonfiction, essays, right? I had a particular issue that came to me the other day and I read the table of contents and there was an essay that was about how to mix a martini. I was like, you know what? I'll give this a shot though, right? It was amazing. Next, we talk about how mashups not only help pitch a book, but can also help the author find a key to unlocking their project, as well as the specific struggles of writing humor and every writer's worst enemy, procrastination. Okay, so I want to talk about mashups. I think that mashups are a great way to pitch a book to your audience. So for our listeners, a mashup is when you take two high concept ideas, which means something that just about anyone can recognize, and put them together to give someone a basic idea of your book. So for example, if I say something is Terminator meets Jaws, you know I'm talking about a futuristic assassin robot shark.
Absolutely.
I've heard Don't Get Caught called Ocean's 11 meets The Breakfast Club. Do you agree, and do you like the comparison?
Okay, so I'm the one who came up with that comparison.
Oh, well, then you do. And by the way, I think it's perfect.
It is perfect. Yeah. It was the key to the whole book. I think books evolve. I really am a slow processor. And I think partly it's just being so damn busy and all of that, you know, I can work for like an hour and a half a day at the most. And then I have to kind of compartmentalize that. And then I'm off doing my other life stuff. I was on like the third or fourth draft. I was struggling with characterization. And suddenly I was like, this is The Breakfast Club. It is The Breakfast Club. And I watched the opening scene of The Breakfast Club, which I still to this day, I think it's the best 3-minute masterclass on how to do characterization. Like, you know, everything about those people from how they talk to their parents and how they're dressed and then how they walk. As soon as I watched that, I was like, I need to rewrite the book that way. Everybody's playing that part. It was the key I needed. And then the Ocean's 11 thing, it was kind of always there in my head anyway. Like, I couldn't figure out a way to make the kids in the book steal things and make it moral. I was like, well, I'll come up with these pranks, but I'll set them up like these really elaborate heists. That was the pitch. It went in all of my query letters, and I was pretty certain that that's why I got such good feedback on it.
I find it very useful when I am pitching to students or readers. I always use mashups. My editor actually did the mashup for Not a Drop to Drink. She called it Little House on the Prairie on crack. And I was like, that's good. For Madness So Discreet, I say it's American Horror Story Season 2 meets Sherlock.
There you go.
Yeah. And when you hit the right audience with that, you either are completely turned on by that or you're like, no, that's not my thing. So why don't you actually, for our listeners, tell us what Don't Get Caught is about.
So Max is like average milquetoast junior in high school, doesn't have a thing, doesn't really fit in anywhere, gets invited to join this society at the school that plays these epic pranks. And of course, he jumps at the thought, knowing he shouldn't go, feeling like it's a setup. But he goes to the school water tower and it's vandalized. He and the other rubes who showed up all get busted for it. Mm-hmm. Max decides he's had enough. Like, he's just not going to put up with this. And what Max knows, and what makes him stand out is Max knows caper films. You know, he knows the Ocean's 11 movies. He knows Leverage. And so he kind of puts this crew together of these people who got caught with him and goes after this organization and decides to do that by playing really elaborate, inappropriate pranks in the school and then blaming this organization in hopes that they'll show themselves to him with a lot of dick jokes. That's the book.
Lots of dick jokes, which I just love. I love a good dick joke.
YAA needs more dick jokes.
Oh, I agree. Oh, which reminds me, the book you and I were talking about before we went on air, This Darkness Mine, lots of dick jokes.
See, it's very freeing.
Yeah, and girls making the dick jokes too, which is fun.
Which
because
is
we do.
Fun.
We make dick jokes all the time. Just FYI.
No, and it's great though when you do. I mean, I think that that helps a male reader. I think that would
agree.
A male high school reader reading that, I think it would be very telling to them.
So you write humor, which I think is the most difficult element to execute. So many aspects of humor are visual and audio, but as a writer, you're completely stripped of those and you're left with black text on a white page. So Don't Get Caught. I was laughing out loud, which I don't do. I don't do that. And I was laughing. So how do you do that? How do you deliver that on the page?
I don't know.
You don't know.
Cool. I don't know.
No, that's
like,
fine.
I think it's the one thing I've always been good at, which was being funny. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't good at anything else, but I could make people laugh. And it drives my wife crazy. People she works with are like, your husband is so funny. She's like, yeah, it's great. It's great for like 5 minutes. Like, try being married to it. So what makes something funny? Then you get into that whole philosophical discussion on humor. But I think to make something work, at least a lot of the things I find funny or when I write them that make me laugh is it's like the unexpected, right? It's having someone say something that you might think really deep down, but you would never say. That's a big part of where kind of my humor comes from. You know, I'm told I'm very dry. My students will say, you're very dark. You have like very dark humor. And I'm like, right. But because it works on you guys, you know, because you're shocked that your teacher is saying things like this in class, not things that could get me in trouble. No, things that could get me in trouble, but shockingly for 22 years, haven't gotten me in trouble.
I understand.
Right. So putting it on the page, a lot of it is in dialogue. Or it comes from an internal monologue. And I think back to Don't Get Caught and the things the characters say that make me laugh. It's probably stuff I would say in the right situation. I'm getting a little bit better about not saying things, but I'm still not very good at it. Appropriate situation, Kurt. There's times when I hear that in my head. It's usually too late.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Humor's hard. And I mean, it's like you said, you laughed out loud and you don't generally laugh out loud. You know, my agent, that's what she said. She was like, I laughed out loud and then I kept doing it and I've got to like finish this and I've got to talk to this person. How do you do that? I don't know. I mean, I think people are funny or they're not funny.
Agreed. Agreed. I have a humorous book. It's a humorous paranormal, if you can put those two together.
Okay.
I call it like a X-Files episode written by Darren Aronofsky, if that means anything to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. All right, perfect. So that's what it is. You know, I have been crafting that book for probably 12 years. It's the hardest damn book I have ever written. Is this humor? But
see, that surprises me with you because you're very funny. You're very funny.
Thank you, yes.
Like, I wonder if you just need to relax. Like, I think part of humor is that. You'll hear comedians talk about that, right? I listen to the WTF podcast a lot. The comedians, Mark Maron will interview, you know, they'll talk about that moment when they found their voice. And for a lot of them, it's just when they stopped trying to perform, dropped any sort of pretense and any sort of mask and were just talking. So think about like, who are the biggest comedians around right now, right? I mean, it's like, it's Louis C.K., it's Dave Chappelle. And all they're doing is just talking and saying things that are really revealing, but they're funny.
Yeah, in everyday situations.
Right, right. And finding the humor in everyday situations. And so I, you know, I don't know how I make things funny, but, you know, it's the thing I do. It's the thing I think I do well. So I've got to stick with it.
You know, actually, I was at an event yesterday. I was speaking. I was being an ass. And people were laughing and they were like, oh, my gosh, you're so funny. I can't wait to read your books. And I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
It's like completely misleading. And people who have already read my books and then they meet me, they're just like, you are not what I expected. And I'm like, well, that's because I take all that really dark crap, you know, and that goes into the book so that I can be this for you.
You're the most contradictory person I've ever met. And I love that about you. Whenever I talk to people and like your name comes up, I'm like, but have you met Mindy? And they're like, no, I want to. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, like she's nothing like you're gonna think. You're like, yeah, but her books are so serious. I'm like, that's my point. Like, that's not Mindy. And I love that about you. Like, there's book Mindy and there is out in public Mindy. And they're so contradictory.
Very, I know. And it's completely misleading. I had this experience. I was checking into a hotel. I don't remember where I was. It was for a conference somewhere. And I said something and I do not remember what it was. I said something jackassy to the guy when I was checking in. And he was like, he knew I was an author because of the, you know, the code that I used to book the room. And he was like, oh, I'm just going to guess that you write humor. And I was actually promoting Female the Species. And I'm like, no.
Right. Nope.
And he's like, well, what's your newest book about? I'm like, it's about a girl that murders rapists. And she was like, oh.
Well, then.
He was like, would you like a warm cookie? And I'm like, yes, please. This woman needs a cookie.
Who's going to kill the guy who gave her a cookie?
Actually, if my humorous book does get published, I will be very relieved because it'll be nice. And you know what? Marketing will be like, holy crap, how do we market this?
No, your books are all over the place anyway. They might as well publish a humor book from you. And then you need to write like a Western.
Romance.
A Western. You need a straight up Western. a romance.
Sci-fi.
Yeah, a sci-fi romance with like a bare-chested astronaut on the cover. Like, just do all.
A bare-chested astronaut. And immediately I'm thinking, but does he have a helmet on?
No, he can't because his hair.
No.
His hair needs to be
flowing.
That needs to be flowing. But he's in zero gravity, so it's perfect.
Right, so it's floating.
It sells itself. You could write that book tonight.
I should be writing something else. I should be writing a book about a girl that gets lost on the Appalachian Trail and almost dies. Did I tell you about that? It's called North Country right now in my head.
No, you haven't told me about it. How far are you into it?
The first chapter. It's due June 1st.
You're fine. You've got plenty of time.
Well, I wrote Madness in 3 weeks, and that was kind of bad because now I know I can. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah, you're just going to count back 3 weeks from June 1st and be like, all right, time to get started.
No, I'm calling that one Drunk Hatchet with a Girl.
Oh, nice. That's a great mashup right there.
Yeah. Drunk Hatchet with a Girl. It sells. It's the one that I was telling you about before we came on, This Darkness Mine. That's Fight Club in the Band Room.
Oh, that's good.
But you know what? We're going to age out of it soon. We're going to age out of it. Yep. We're not going to be able to use it anymore.
No, most of my students haven't read or seen Fight Club. In my reading class, I throw that in as a cult book pick, and a lot of them read it. And it's good for them to read, you know, because they go, wait, you can do this with a book? I'm like, yeah.
Yes, you can.
It's good that you can see that now.
Are your students impressed by your publishing credit or not? Because I know when I was working at the school, mine could care less.
I don't know. I maybe a bunch of them have read my book. And when it was coming out, a lot of them were reading it. And then that number has dropped since then, like with another set of students coming in. But if they are, they're not saying anything about it. Not that they would. I'm a little imposing. You know, I'm 6'4" and bald and scary looking. So, but they do, you know, once every couple of weeks, someone comes up and asks me to sign their book, which is very flattering.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I talk to them about writing on a real practical level. There's no ivory tower about writing when I talk about it. I'm like, no, it sucks and it's hard work and, you know, but it's awesome and very fulfilling. And that's why I do it. But there are days where it absolutely sucks. And that's most days. And that's good for them to hear it because I know they struggle with the writing and, you know, it makes them probably more comfortable. In my creative writing class, I think it gives me a certain respectability, you know, because it's like, oh, well, he wrote a book. And so they'll listen to me, right? You know, when they're doing shorter pieces, I can really help them and they'll listen to me, whereas they might not somebody else. But the freshman teachers will pitch my book hard and get a lot of kids to read them, but they don't understand I teach in the building.
Oh.
I think most kids, and I try to clear this up with them, they think writers are, they're all rich and that's all they do. And I'm like, no. They have full-time jobs for the most part, unless you're Mindy McGinnis and you just like you write and you go back to your full-time job. So I don't think they're overly impressed. If they are, they're not showing it. They're not bringing me gifts and bowing down when I walk into the room.
You know, mine aren't impressed either. I think that's just they knew me before. You know, they knew me as their librarian. They didn't know me as a writer. It's just something else that someone that they know did. And I think the other important thing, you do have kind of, I think, a dichotomy when it comes to people knowing that you're a writer. They either think that you own a yacht and you spend most of your time trying to think of what to name your next boat or something.
Right.
Or they don't realize how damn hard it is and what you've accomplished. Like, that has been my experience. It's interesting, the different perceptions of what an author's life is like and what an author's struggle is like. And it is a struggle. You're right. It sucks.
That's why it's so important. I've always said to know other writers, be around other writers.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because they get it. You know, they get it. That you can't crack a book or like you're just stuck on something or whatever. Like they understand, like they can commiserate and it's not like they go, it'll come. Like they just go, yeah, that sucks.
Like, I have faith in you.
Right. Right. It's nothing like that.
I know you can do it.
Right.
It's like, no, man, have a drink. I get it. My biggest thing is just sitting down to write. That's what stops me.
Okay.
It's just procrastination all the time. If I can find something else to do, by God, I will do that first.
Writers are amazing at that. Yeah.
And once I'm sitting down, usually I manage. I will just have to sit there and kind of clear my head for a minute. And you have to be, I think, in the right headspace for that book,
even
to be able to execute it. And that's it's hard to learn how to get there.
So how do you do it? Do you go back and read pages? Does that help?
I go back, I read what I wrote the day before, and that's it. Yeah. I don't go any further.
Right. No, that makes sense.
And then I'll fix little boo-boos because there's always some, but I don't do any editing. Like, I'll fix surface things.
Okay.
And if I have to check for continuity or something, you know, that maybe. But, like, that's it. And it's just onward and upward. You got to keep writing. Nobody else is going to be able to put those words on the page for that book. I have to do it.
Yep. Always be moving toward the mountain.
So do you, another question related to your classroom, do you try out things on your kids? Like, if you've got something you think is funny, kind of like try to wheedle it into conversation and see if it works?
No.
No? Okay. No.
I don't. It's not that I don't trust their opinion. A lot of the stuff I write, I don't know if it's going to be around for very long.
Understood.
I have a couple of readers, but I'm not going to ask them. I think they're just going to tell me we love it. I did, though, run a focus group when Sourcebook sent me the cover of my book.
Okay.
And I was like, I don't know what to make of this. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to show it to all of my students. And I'm going to say, this isn't mine. This isn't my baby. This is the cover. What do you think? Tell me honestly, write it down. That was really helpful. The kid going, I would totally pick that book up just to see what it was. And I went, That's the only purpose a book cover like serves, right? Like, that's it.
That's exactly.
And I was like, that's the cover. I was all for it after that. But no, I don't.
I love your cover.
I do too. I love the red. The cow thing was weird. I do love the red. And they basically went with what I had asked them for, which was I wanted something real minimal. And I wanted red, black, and white if I could get it. And they gave it to me. I mean, I guess they went through 25 other covers, and I would love to have seen what they came up with. But when they came up with that, everyone was like, that's the one. So,
no, I love your cover. It was on, I think it was on Edelweiss or NetGalley or one of those things. I didn't even know you were from Ohio. I saw that cover and I thought, what is this? Why are there cows on this book? Like, the cows worked for me. They totally got my attention.
Yeah.
And then I read the blurb and I was, because I have access to the eARCs and stuff like that as a librarian. Downloaded it, read it. And I either talked to your publicist or I looked you up online. I don't remember what it was. It was like, oh my God, he's from Ohio, you know?
Oh,
so your cover
shocking.
Totally did its job.
It was shocking that I was like, Mindy McGinnis read my book. This is before I knew you. And then I was like, oh my God, like you had written this really nice review. And I was like, Mindy McGinnis read my book. And then I met you and I'm like, oh God. Like, now we're back to the whole, you know, the dichotomy of like book Mindy and like real world Mindy.
And you're like, oh, yeah, she probably did love that book. She's kind of an ass.
This is right in her wheelhouse. Yeah.
Oh, it is. It's absolutely right in my wheelhouse. I loved it. Oh, and I loved, and I know I said this to you, but I want to repeat it for my listeners. I think it's adorable. In the corner of the book, there's a flip book. There's art in the corner of the pages that if you flip through the pages, there's a cow like doing somersaults and running down the edge of the page. And I just think it's so clever and cute and adorable. I love it.
That took me like 5 minutes to get used to it.
Really?
I saw it and I'm like, what the hell is this? And then I remember saying it out loud. I was like, wait, who do you think you are? Like, I haven't written War and Peace here. Like, I've written a book filled with pranks and just dick jokes. Like, if they want to put a flipping cow, like literally a flipping cow in the corner as a flip book, you guys go crazy. You know your business much better than I do. So go. Yeah. People love
and
that.
You know what? I loved it. I thought it was very clever. And I show it to my students when I have kids that read the book and they're like, oh my gosh, this was so funny. I loved it. And I'll say, did you notice the art? And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, there's cows. And I'm like, yeah, but look. And I flip the corner and they're like, oh my God. They love it. They think it's awesome.
Readers are so awesomely nerdy about things like that.
They are. They are. They're unapologetically enthusiastic.
Yes, they are. That's a great way to put it.
Completely unrelated. You're very tall. How does that make you feel?
Being tall is awesome.
You like it?
Yes. It's always paid dividends. Like,
I see.
Except I understand that taller people have lower life expectancy. So
really?
That's not good. And I'm left-handed. So that's like a double whammy.
You are fucked.
Right. I am totally fucked. But no, it's always been really helpful. Like, I've never had problems seeing things at movies or at concerts. I'm not even aware of how tall I am until I see someone who's very tall. And then I have to say, am I as tall as that guy? And they'll be like, no, he's taller than you. and then when I was dating, like, tall women loved me because they could wear heels. And they were like, yes. But no, it's always been great. I'm not even aware of how tall I am. Like, it's just, it's just a thing.
You have no perspective on your own height.
No, I don't.
No, that makes sense. No, I'm down with the tall women thing because I'm 5'9".
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like I can't wear heels ever. I mean, my boyfriend's like maybe an inch taller than me, so I put on heels and he's always like,
He's got to put lifts in his shoes.
He just stays home. That's
nice.
I put on heels. He's like, you know what? Just go without me. Being a tall woman, I totally understand that appreciation for tall men because we do. We like to wear heels and because they look good on us. That's what who they're made for. And, you know, men get scared and it's just like, no, it's okay.
No, a woman finally explained that to me. I was like, oh, that's why all the tall women like me. Okay.
No, it's true. It also makes us feel more feminine, which is important.
The high heels.
When you're a tall woman. No, being with a man that's taller than
that.
You.
I understand that.
Yeah. Because when you're a female and you're tall, it's cool. But like I was this size when I was in sixth grade. So that was like traumatizing for me and for everyone else. It was like I was scary to the boys. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
I still have that in my head that I'm scary to men. Well, like, see, it's just, it was impacted on me.
No, what I think is cute is that you think it's your height that scared off all the boys.
That wasn't it.
It couldn't possibly be anything else. It was your height. No, that's great.
It was my height.
Great. No.
It wasn't that I made dick jokes to them about their dicks.
a couple of therapy sessions, and I'm sure you'll come to a revelation. But no, you go right along with the, it's your height.
It's because I'm tall. It's not because I'm forceful.
No, not at all.
Lastly, Kurt tells us what's coming next for him. I try very hard to wheedle him into using social media more. And then we talk about things you didn't know were poisonous and our porn names. So we were talking about sitting down and just writing a damn book. So what's next for you?
I was going through dark days, the dark night of the soul for about a month, where I was still writing, but I was like, this is so wrong. Like, this is going off the rails because I'm writing a mystery. The mystery was stupid. And my agent's like, you're not writing a mystery. You're writing a contemporary YA book, but you don't like contemporary YA books. So you've thrown a mystery in to make it interesting for you. And so you can tell people you're writing a mystery. I was like, okay, that's fair. That's exactly what I'm doing. When I figured out the mystery, which was just recently, like that was kind of the key because I was so stuck. Like writers will know this, like you marry yourself to an idea, right? You tether yourself to something and you're like, no, this is where they live or this is what the best friend does. And you're like, no, they can change that. And as soon as you start changing that stuff and get comfortable with changing it, things get much better, right? The writing just gets freer and your choices are open up. But anyway, so yeah, I'm writing a YA. Like, I used to love Moonlighting, which, you know, it's like, how is there not a teen detective series with, like, banter? And it's a boy and a girl, and they don't really like each other, right? They kind of do, but, you know, and they banter back and forth. And so that's what I'm writing.
Nice.
And I think I'm going to call it Wanna Bet with a nice little question mark. And that was kind of the key. Like, once I thought of that, I was like, I can filter the entire book through that phrase, and I think I can write the whole thing now.
So how are you going to pitch that? I'm just curious, because Moonlighting is not going to land with your audience.
A little cool. I'm hoping something comes to me, but no, I'm not. You know, I've recently, within the last 2 years, realized I am completely out of the loop. I don't understand most of the things trending on Twitter.
Understood.
I can pull up Entertainment Weekly and look at their headlines, and I'm like, I don't know who these people are.
Yeah, me too, but I'm proud of that.
I am too. It makes it hard, though, to come up with a comparison for the book. Even using Veronica Mars now is too it's almost too dated.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm just going to let them figure it out.
That's marketing's job. So, yeah. I mean, you were lucky enough to come up with something for the last one. The Breakfast Club is always timely. So,
right.
But moonlighting, I mean, you're just getting me there,
right.
You know?
Right. There's no way.
I remember it. I remember it because I wasn't allowed to be in the room when it was on.
Right. People are like, Bruce Willis was on TV? Or no, most of the kids are like, who's Bruce Willis? And I'm like,
oh, no.
And I go,
no.
I go, The Sixth Sense. And they're like, no idea. No idea what you're talking about.
But it'll work with your fellow writers.
Right. Right.
And then you can, maybe one of them will be able to come up with something to comp it to in a modern language.
It'll be someone much younger, right? Than I am.
No, it will be, totally. But, you know, I come up across this too sometimes, and I get this question a lot when I'm doing school visits or library visits. Younger people always ask me to fan cast my book. Who would play so-and-so? And it's like, dude, I can't name you an actor under 40.
Right. Yeah, I could never. I could never do that. I don't know any. No. I don't know any actor under, even like, how old is Emma Stone? Like, she's got to be in her 30s, right?
She's in her 30s at least, yeah.
She's really young to me. The Harry Potter people are all young to me, but I know they're, like, in their 30s now.
They're in their 30s, right? I agree, but that's my reference for the young ones, is the Harry Potter cast, right?
I guess I could go the iCarly girl, but again, she's, like, really old now.
She is, yeah, that's not going to work.
No.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, the most ridiculous thing I could ever come up with. And I would probably be like, I don't know, like, Kurt Russell in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang? Like, that's... I can give you old actors when they were young. Like, that's all I can do. Yeah. There are some catchy things now that I do like. Stranger Things was good.
That's what I'll say.
Did you see
that? I'll just go, all of those kids from Stranger Things.
Do you have your social media follows handy so you can tell everyone where to find you online?
No. Twitter.
Oh my gosh.
Where am I on Twitter? I'm really terrible at Twitter. Let's all of the social media failings I have is probably at Kurt Dinan, KURTDINAN. Like that's
I'm gonna do this for you.
And then I have a Facebook author page that I never update. I'm terrible with all of them.
Just so you know, your Twitter is your name.
Yeah.
Kurt Dinan.
Cool.
There's no underscores or anything. I'm gonna go look at your Facebook for fun.
Oh, yeah.
And just so you know, when I type in your name, it wants to autofill Kurt Busch.
Oh, that's a race car guy.
Yeah, I think so, right?
Okay. Or my porn name.
That's your porn name? I have a fantastic porn name. It's Silky Bartlett.
Oh, that is beautiful. Holy cow.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Yeah. But my boyfriend actually has everyone beat on porn names. His porn name is Sylvester Goldsmith.
Oh, that's beautiful, too.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, but I'm going to have to give the edge to you. Silky.
Silky Bartlett?
Silky is so perfect.
Okay, well, get this. My sister's is Fluffy Bartlett.
Nice. Fluffy.
So we can totally do, like, a series.
A completely non-sexy word. Fluffy. Right there.
Yeah, your Facebook page, you have your podcast that you did for the Cincinnati Public Library. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Sure. I'm the writer in residence for the Cincinnati Public Library, which is shocking to many people with one book under my belt, but I interview really well.
I believe you.
And so I do a podcast for them. I keep up their blog when I think about it. I run writing workshops with them. I do other like small events for them. And it's fantastic. And I get to, you know, interview authors for the podcast. And I interviewed you and I interviewed last year's writer in residence. And then it's kind of like I do a lot of Cincinnati or Ohio writers and just kind of friends of mine. And it's a lot of fun.
Really,
you know, we talk writing really and it's, you know, try to get some like nuts and bolts tips out there for people. And
yeah, that's why I'm doing this.
I think it's great.
I mean, I enjoy doing it.
Anything to keep you from writing. You're coming up with lots of ways not to write.
You would be amazed.
You know,
I'm going to start a reality TV show.
Yeah, you're going to start a puppet troupe next.
Of course I am, because there's a market for that.
I'm going to text you and be like, what are you doing? You're going to be like, I'm darning sock puppets.
Sewing a costume for marionettes.
Yeah, just trying to untangle these goddamn marionettes.
Okay, so are you anywhere else on social media? I'm guessing not.
No. No, I'm terrible at it. I know it's an age thing. Twitter to me is like a full-time job. I am amazed at people who do like
50... Dude, it's not an age thing. I'm like 6 years younger than you.
You're oldish, but yeah, the Twitter thing is like a full-time job and I don't have the time. Stuff hits me and then I'm like, oh, that's clever. Like today I was in Kroger in the baking aisle and I thought my ironic find of the day, vanilla extract is really expensive.
It's very expensive.
Right? That's a tweet right there. I get it. That's what I would do. I'm not going to tweet that out.
Why didn't you send it?
I'm just not.
Why not?
I don't know.
You're just being obstinate.
Because who cares? Like, but I know people care. So vanilla extract is crazy expensive. That makes no sense.
Yeah. No, I don't understand. Did you know that vanilla is poisonous?
Oh, is it really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you drink too much, like real vanilla extract, it'll kill you. The thing about vanilla that gets me is that it smells awesome, and yeah. I'm a vanilla fan, yeah. But boy, it just tastes like shit.
I'm sure you're going to work that into your next book.
Oh, yeah. Vanilla can kill you.
Writer, Writer, Pants on Fire is produced by Mindy McGinnis, music by Jack Corbel. A special thank you to fellow author Alyssa Palombo and patrons Stephen Avery and R.C. Lewis for helping to make this episode possible. If you find the blog or podcast helpful, please consider showing your support by visiting patron.podbean.com/writer-writer-pants-on-fire and making a donation. I'm your host, Mindy McGinnis, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Writer, Writer, Pants on Fire, where authors talk about things that never happened to people who don't exist.